your story as a parent can unfold in so many different ways that there's just no way to prepare for one out of the million ways that being a parent is going to show up for you. Like, you just don't know. So that's, you know, that's one of the tricks. That's one of the tricks that the universe plays on you, you know, when you become a parent, is you really, you don't know. So maybe some acceptance around the fact that it's just going to be a journey, and you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to need help. And that's just part of this human parenting experience.
Welcome everybody to I Wish They Taught That in School. I'm your host, Mike Mulick. I ask people what they wish they were taught in school, and this is what they said.
What is it called?
It's called A Happy, Healthy Mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Very exciting. And the book's coming out in a couple months, at the end of the summer or in the fall.
Yeah. August 25th, 2026. So this fall.
Yeah. And just tell me just a little bit about like how this project came to be, because you're working with Rick Hansen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Rick Hansen is a clinical psychologist, and he wrote the book, Mother Nurture, over 20 years ago with Jan Hansen, who's a nutritionist, and Ricky Polykov, who's an OBGYN. And they were wanting to make an updated version, for a long time. And essentially I ended up contributing to the book by updating all of the statistics, updating the book to reflect modern motherhood and some of the challenges that we're going through now that we weren't going through over 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's, now how, that sounds amazing. How is that working with Rick Hansen on this project?
Oh, well, it's the greatest. I mean, he's so respected in the field, and all three of them are. And I first came to the work reading his book, Buddha Brain, and he's just such a compassionate guy and such a warm parent himself. So yeah, I learned a lot in the process, and I also just feel really privileged to be part of the book.
Yeah, no, it's really amazing work, and I'm excited that you're doing this and that it's coming out. I think what I wanted to do is kind of narrow in on one of the specific updates that you did for this book, and it involves social media, because I think when did the first publication come out of Mother Nurture?
I believe it came out around 2001.
Yeah. So in 2001, I mean, people were really, it was like, that was just, the internet was only just starting to really blow up. And so social media was definitely not a thing in 2001, but now it is. And it became, it sounds like a significant part of the update. And I think what I want to do is just talk a little bit about, the problem with social media. Is there a problem with what social media does, or does it just reveal better the problems that we already have?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does a little bit of both. Like, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because on one hand, you know, we have so much information at our fingertips, information that moms and dads in the past would be going to the library, you know, maybe scouring the library for info about their baby or what's going on. We also are able to, you know, feel like we're seen and validated when we're watching, you know, maybe other moms on Instagram. So it can feel sort of connecting in some ways. But then on the other hand, when we're behind our screens, we're really isolating ourselves more than ever, and not only isolating ourselves from support communities that would make us feel like we're more connected and we're more seen and heard, but it's often disconnecting us from our kids too, because instead of taking these moments to be with our kids or to appreciate maybe the quieter moments, a lot of parents are finding themselves doom scrolling instead.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second. What happens psychologically when a new mom is constantly exposed to a highlight reel of parenting?
Yeah, well, it's going to really lead to a lot of comparison. And I find that most of the comparison isn't, oh, look how much better I'm doing than that mom. Most of the comparison is, wow, I'm really failing. I'm really not doing it right. Even the moms who, the influencers who, they do a really nice job of showing the funny moments or the messy moments of parenting. And yet it still leaves us somehow feeling like, should I be doing more? Should I be an influencer? Should I be recording all these moments? There's always opportunities to compare ourselves. And really, that leads to so much suffering when we're constantly comparing ourselves and wondering if we could be doing better and more.
Yeah, that's and it sounds like that is something that is kind of like not just even for parents, but for even those of us that don't, or people out there that don't have parents. It sounds like there perhaps is some real harm in comparing ourselves on this content. Do you think there's any type of content that is most harmful, or is it just the manner in which we and the amount of time we engage with it?
Yeah, I really do think that some of the platforms that are, I mean, they're all designed to keep you on the platform, right? So they're all designed to be addictive. They're all designed to keep you coming back, to keep you looking at more, to keep you scrolling past ads for things that, you know, you probably don't need. it is addictive. Like it is hard. Like we're not talking about stepping away from this as being an easy thing. I do think that the platforms that are really engaging in short content so that you have to just keep flipping through is really harmful in terms of the self-comparison game.
Is there a way that parents can use social media in a healthy way?
I suppose if they're able to put a time limit on it, maybe they can set a time limit on their phone. It really is the time spent. But I would just say personally for myself, even a couple minutes, I was just looking at my phone because I'm re-engaging with social media because of this book. And, I had to post something and I think I was two posts in and I was already feeling bad about myself. You know, I was always already looking at something and going, oh, I'm noticing that I don't have a good feeling right now. You know, it really doesn't take long for something to hit you in a funny way like that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I've definitely noticed that myself. And it kind of feels like if you almost have to take a break from it to really notice that change.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people are using it to sort of numb deeper and more painful emotions that they don't want to have to feel. But they don't realize that they're doing it because it's such a socially acceptable way to numb yourself. Whereas like drinking alcohol or doing drugs, you know, like those are not socially acceptable, you know, for the most part, ways to numb out your bad feelings. But looking and engaging with social media is not only socially acceptable, it's just become the total norm. And so, you know, that's a thing, is even if you are going to engage with social media, maybe take a second to just sort of take a breath and go, what is it that I'm feeling right now? What is it that I'm needing right now? You know, and am I trying to escape sort of a more difficult emotion or feeling?
Yeah. And I want to name an emotion that I think that you had mentioned a little bit earlier, which is just kind of feeling bad about yourself, or I'm not sure if this is the right word, but maybe shame. Is there, do you think that even if, even without social media, do you think moms feel like they're failing even if they're objectively doing well?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think that happens all the time. I think social media has really propelled us into a new level of looking at content that can exacerbate our shame. But I do think that it's out there even without social media because everyone has an opinion about how you should parent, right? Everyone has an opinion about how mothers should give birth, whether they should breastfeed, what they should do with their baby. I mean, even within a family structure, you're going to find aunts and moms and dads and cousins that are all going to have a different idea and unsolicited advice for you. And I think it's easy to get caught in the trap of, not even allowing yourself to make mistakes, but to actually feel like you're the mistake, right? It's like the difference between shame and guilt is shame is I am bad, and guilt is, oh, I did something bad, right? So guilt could be useful and help, you can put it up against your values and then feel a little discomfort and make a different choice next time. But shame is actually insidious and it causes you to sort of look at your self-worth and feel like maybe I'm not worthy. Maybe I don't belong. Like maybe I'm really like deep down bad inside.
Yeah, this is really interesting. Do you think that there are practical ways to recognize when shame is driving thoughts? Or, well, no, let me ask you a better question. What are there practical ways to interrupt the shame spiral in real time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like one of the things we can do is notice what we're feeling in our bodies, like getting really curious about what shame feels like, which can be unusual if you've never really tried that before. But even closing your eyes and taking a couple of deep inhales through your nose and exhales through your mouth, and just kind of asking yourself, like, what am I feeling right now? Chances are it's usually like a deeper emotion under anger or stress or anxiousness. There might be loneliness or fear or deep sadness. So I feel like just really getting curious about how that feels in your body. Maybe it's a tightness in your chest. Maybe it's a pit in your stomach. Maybe your neck feels tight or you feel like you're choking or claustrophobic. And when you get sort of in touch with what that feels like in your body, the next time you feel it in your body, you can kind of go back to it, take a breath, and just sort of recognize that, ooh, like this is shame. And that's, kind of naming it to tame it is sort of the first step, I would say.
So let's just say that we have let's just say we were 100% healthy with 100% mental health. Is
Okay.
it still possible to have some sad and shameful internal dialogue? Like, is it normal to kind of have some troublesome thoughts?
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't think it's reasonable to think that you're going to get rid of your emotions. And I think emotions are a really important cue to something is going on inside, and it's, your body saying, hey, listen to me, like this is important, that this is something is either getting in the way of my values or a boundary is being crossed, or I need some care and attention, or I need a hug, or my system needs to be regulated, right? There's all sorts of reasons that our emotions peak to let us know that we need attention and care.
Yeah, really, really insightful and really amazing thoughts there. Do you think that there is shame in needing help?
No, I think that we have definitely, we've created something, especially in Western industrialized society, where we're going against what humans need and what we've needed for hundreds of thousands of years, which is to not parent in isolation. Like we are social creatures, we need people around us. And people are not meant to parent without support. They're just not. And this is, I would say, you know, just tying back to what you asked me originally, like this is one of the biggest things that's changed since we've gotten these little computers in our hands, is we're able to separate ourselves with these screens, and we feel, although we're superficially connected, we're not doing the thing that our bodies and our nervous systems have needed for hundreds of thousands of years as humans, which is to be social and to be with people and to be out there co-regulating with people for support.
Yeah. Well, that's definitely one of the toughest challenges that our, that we as humans are dealing with in this particular time in human history.
Yeah, every human, right? Like not just parents. Yeah, I mean, this that applies to everyone for sure. But as parents, we're also teaching our babies how to co-regulate, right? We're actually teaching these tiny little humans, these little vulnerable humans, like how to regulate when they feel scared and afraid or sad or lonely. And so when we're not around other humans and we're not getting support, like there's no, there really needs to be no shame in that, because in seeking support, because we need it just in order to not only have a happier experience parenting, but also to help our kids become, you know, fully securely attached adults.
Yeah. Well, I want to wrap this up with in a way to leave people who are struggling with something. And I, you know, I called the show "I Wish They Taught That in School," because everybody brings to this show something that they're like, gosh, they really wish that they knew that or taught that. So what would you say is something that you wish every new mom knew? Or maybe what do you wish that you yourself knew before becoming a mom?
Yeah. So many things, but I guess if I could say one thing, it would be, I wish that I knew that my expectations and my hopes for motherhood were, although they were worthy, they were unrealistic, and that I would need a lot more help than I thought.
Yeah. And what do you think, what's something that you wish every partner knew?
I suppose I would like partners to know that although their lives are going to change, there's something so immediate about the life change of especially, you know, for any mother, for any parent, but the identity shift and the, what moms are going to have to do in terms of like grieving their old life and building a new one around values they didn't even know they would have after having kids is a really powerful shift. And it begins with, I wouldn't even say pregnancy, just planning to get pregnant. There's so many rules around, moms and what they have to do. And there's so many expectations for moms. So I wish that partners just knew to, you know, to please be gentle with these moms as they're going through this journey, because it's life shifting for everyone, but it really, the expectations and the shaming of mothers is really real, especially in our society.
Would you say that is somehow tied to, well, I had a question here that I wanted to ask about the biggest myths of motherhood. And I wonder if that, the way in which our society has expectations of moms, is sort of tied into that question about, like, is there one big myth that people should know about motherhood? Or,
oh yeah, big myth. I I think it's just culturally we've created this do it yourself, pick yourself up by the bootstraps, you know, gritty, you know, especially for us in America, right? American lifestyle and really like the nuclear family that's like a new revelation in American history that kind of happened around the 50s. But before that, people were growing up in intergenerational households with lots of help. So it's like, we're really living in a recent phenomenon, but we accept it as ultimate truth that, you know, either one or two people are meant to raise a kid and make all the decisions and, you know, not ask for help. And I think that that's a big myth, that just because we grew up in it in this generation, it doesn't mean that that's the right way to do it.
Wow. I think that's probably a good place to end it. Because this is parenthood is a very challenging thing, but especially in this time, and you don't really understand it until you're really in it.
Yeah, that's the craziest thing, isn't it?
Crazy.
Yeah, you don't really know until you're in it.
It is probably not something that we can teach in school, maybe we can, but it's...
Yeah, I don't know. You know,
this depth with this much broken up family and isolation is something that is going to take a lot more than just a class or two in school.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. I mean, it's something that we see other people do, and we think like, oh, I could do it like that, or oh, I would never do it like that. And we just create this plot in our mind of how it's going to be and what's going to happen. And we think we can control it like many other things in our life. But I mean, you know, this as a doctor who works with kids, like you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, your story as a parent can unfold in so many different ways that there's just no way to prepare for one out of the a million ways that being a parent is going to show up for you. Like you just don't know. So that's, you know, that's one of the tricks. That's one of the tricks that the universe plays on you, you know, when you become a parent is you don't know. So maybe some acceptance around the fact that it's just going to be a journey and you're going to make mistakes and you're going to need help. And that's just part of this human parenting experience.
Yeah, I remember before having kids, I'd be on an airplane with like and there'd be like a crying baby, and I would just glare at the parents and I'd be like, "You terrible parent.
Horrible like, parent.
You are just ruining my
wrong with you." Time.
And I'll never forget the first flight we had with our baby, and I was like, "Oh God."
Oh my God, I was sweating.
Well, karma coming back to me because it's like you can't.
Yeah, oh, yeah, parenthood's a real kick in the pants, especially if you had judgments before parenthood.
Now I don't. Yeah, now I just look at the parent. I see a baby crying, and it's bothersome to me, but it's like in a different way. I'm just like, oh boy,
you feel rough. Bad for them. Yeah, and you feel bad that if they, you know, look around like they're. Like they're feeling ashamed, you know, that's where I feel. I just kind of put my hand over my heart and like offer loving kindness to them because I just feel bad for them now. Yeah.
Well, Renee Berna, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. The book is called A Happy, Healthy Mom, coming out, in a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. Coming out August 25th. And you can pre-order it now. We have information to pre-order it on www.ahappyhealthymom.com. So check it out if you're interested.
Yeah, great. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not constitute professional advice of any kind, including but not limited to medical, financial, or legal advice. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be used as a substitute for professional judgment, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the guidance of a qualified professional with any questions you may have regarding your specific situation. If you are experiencing a medical emergency or a life-threatening condition, please call 911 immediately or contact your primary care physician. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree that you are responsible for your own decisions, actions, and outcomes.